A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
6-4 smooths in 10 years. A landlord who ends your tenancy because you ask them to fix a leak. Another who rips out the toilet while the tenants are still living there. These aren't horror stories from some housing crisis documentary. This is Daniel's actual life in Israel. And he's asking us something that goes way beyond venting. If the system is this broken, and you've got a day job and no political connections, can one person actually build a movement to change it? Today we're answering that question with a blueprint. Not just a list of what's wrong, but how people in other countries have fought back and won, and what that looks like here.
I want to say something before we dive into the mechanics of all this. What Daniel's describing, that feeling of never being able to settle, the constant background anxiety that your home could be pulled out from under you with 90 days notice, that's not just an inconvenience. I spent decades as a pediatrician, and I'll tell you, housing instability is one of those things that shows up in ways you don't expect. Kids' school performance, chronic stress, the kind of low-grade exhaustion that people just learn to live with. It's a health issue as much as an economic one.
Which is why treating it as a fifth-tier political issue, as Daniel puts it, is genuinely perverse. You've got a country that actively courts Jewish immigration, that talks constantly about being a homeland, and then it hands new arrivals, a rental system that punishes the very idea of putting down roots. The contradiction is so glaring, you'd think someone in the Knesset would have noticed.
They have noticed. That's the thing. This isn't a problem nobody's aware of. The 2017 Fair Rental Law was supposed to address it. It exists on paper. And it has accomplished approximately nothing, because it was built without any enforcement mechanism, without a mandatory rental registry, without any way to actually collect data on what landlords are charging or doing. It's a law that says be fair and then walks away.
The legislative equivalent of a sternly worded note on the fridge.
And that's where we need to start if we're going to talk about solutions. Understanding why that law failed so completely, what tenancy at will actually means in practice, and why the existing tenant organizations, as well-intentioned as they are, can't solve the structural problem with pro bono contract review alone.
Let's get into the mechanics of why this system is so broken. Starting with that 2017 law that was supposed to fix it. Because the failure here isn't just disappointing, it's instructive. It tells you exactly where the leverage points are.
The 2007 law is a perfect case study in how to look like you're solving a problem while doing nothing at all. It set out some nice principles. Limits on renewal refusal, some language about maintenance obligations. But it didn't create a rental registry. No registry means no data. And no data means you can't enforce anything because you don't even know what the baseline is. What's the average rent in a given neighborhood? Are landlords systematically overcharging relative to some standard? Can't answer that either. Germany has the Mietspiegel, a publicly accessible database of local rental prices that landlords have to reference when justifying increases. Israel has Vibes.
Vibes and a handshake, which is essentially how most leases get signed. And that leads straight into the mechanism that actually causes all this chaos, tenancy at will. Most people hear lease and think of a fixed term, right? You sign for a year, you're locked in, both sides have certainty. Israel's default is the opposite. Either party can terminate with notice, usually 90 days, sometimes less, depending on the contract. So even if you've been in the same apartment for 3 years, you're never more than 3 months from being told to leave.
That's the root of the instability Daniel's describing. It's not just the moves themselves, it's the permanent, low-grade precariousness. You hesitate to put up shelves, to paint a wall, to invest in the neighborhood, to enroll kids in the local school with any confidence they'll finish the year there. Every forced move costs thousands of shekels in agency fees, deposits, moving trucks, sometimes lawyer fees if the landlord decides to play games with the security deposit. Daniel mentioned 6 moves in 10 years. That's not bad luck. That's the system working exactly as designed, just not for the tenant.
What gets me is how thoroughly this contradicts the national narrative. Israel spends enormous energy on Aliyah, marketing itself as the Jewish homeland, running absorption programs, the whole apparatus. And then new immigrants land in this rental jungle where the person they're paying rent to can decide on a whim that they're done with you. It's like rolling out a welcome mat that's actually a trapdoor.
The political blind spot here is real, and it's not mysterious. Most Knesset members own their homes. The people writing housing policy don't rent. They don't feel the problem, so it doesn't register as urgent, not compared to security debates or coalition politics or any of the meta issues that dominate the news cycle. Housing gets shuffled to the bottom of the agenda because the people with the power to fix it aren't the ones living with the consequences.
Which means the only way this changes is if someone makes the problem impossible to ignore. And that's the gap Daniel's actually pointing at, not a lack of legal aid, but a lack of political pressure. The existing tenant organizations do contract review, which is useful, but it's triage. Nobody's out there building a constituency of renters who vote, who show up, who make housing a liability for politicians who ignore it.
That's the question worth digging into. Not whether the system is broken, we know it is, but how people in other countries have turned that kind of diffuse frustration into organized leverage. Because the models exist, and they didn't start with full-time staff and big budgets.
Walk me through the German system, this Mietspiegel thing. Because from the outside, it sounds almost boring. A database of rental prices, and yet it seems to be the thing that makes every other protection actually work.
It's boring in exactly the way infrastructure is boring, until you don't have it, and then nothing functions. The Mietspiegel is a mandatory, publicly accessible registry of local rental prices updated regularly. If a landlord wants to raise your rent above the local comparable rate, they have to justify it, and they have to do it with reference to the published data. It flips the burden of proof. Instead of the tenant having to prove they're being gouged, the landlord has to prove they're not. Israel has the exact inverse. There's no registry, no published comparables, no burden on the landlord at all. You sign a lease based on whatever number the landlord names, and you have no way of knowing if it's reasonable.
That's the enforcement gap in a single example. The 2017 law could have created something like that. A simple registration requirement. Landlords file the lease terms. The government compiles the data. It's not complicated. They just didn't do it.
Didn't do it, and didn't fund any enforcement body to do anything else either. The law exists as text. There's no inspectorate, no ombudsman, no tribunal that a tenant can access without hiring a private lawyer. Which brings us back to Daniel's experience. He and his wife ended up paying out of pocket for legal help because the existing tenant organizations simply didn't have the capacity. And that's not a criticism of those organizations. They're doing what they can with a handful of lawyers running pro bono contract review. But contract review doesn't stop a landlord from terminating your tenancy because you asked for a leak repair.
That's the story that sticks with me. You report a maintenance issue, something the landlord is legally obligated to fix, and the response isn't to fix it, it's to end your tenancy. The system doesn't just fail to protect tenants, it actively punishes them for asserting the few rights they technically have.
The toilet story. A landlord physically removing a toilet while tenants are still living in the unit. That's not a contract dispute, that's a demonstration of power. The landlord knew there would be no consequences, and there weren't. When you have no registry, no enforcement body, and tenancy at will as the default, the relationship isn't contractual in any meaningful sense. It's discretionary. The landlord's discretion.
Which is why Daniel's instinct is right. Pro bono contract review is a bandage on a wound that needs surgery. The gap isn't legal advice. The gap is political organizing. Nobody is collecting these stories, aggregating them into a narrative, and using that narrative to make housing a live issue for legislators who currently feel zero pressure to act.
This is where Daniel's specific assets come in, because they're not trivial. Content creation, video editing, publishing experience, those are the raw materials of modern advocacy. He's not starting from zero. He's got a network of Hebrew-fluent friends who can help stories reach the Israeli public, not just the English-speaking bubble. Most grassroots movements don't begin with a policy white paper. They begin with someone pointing a camera and saying, "Tell me what happened to you."
The question then becomes what you do with that camera once it's rolling. And that's where looking at how other countries crack this problem gets instructive, because the playbook exists, and it didn't require anyone to quit their day job.
The Los Angeles Tenants Union is probably the cleanest example of starting from nothing and building leverage. This was 2015. A handful of activists in LA, no funding, no institutional backing. They didn't open a legal clinic. They didn't draft model legislation. They started by telling stories. Tenants facing eviction, rent hikes, slum conditions, and they published those stories on social media. The first organizing tool was a narrative, not a policy paper.
The camera before the committee hearing.
And from that narrative base, they moved to direct action, rent strikes, public pressure campaigns, showing up at landlords' offices with a crowd and a live stream. The key insight is that they made the problem visible before they tried to solve it. You can't organize tenants around a policy they don't understand, but you can organize them around a story they recognize as their own.
Which maps pretty cleanly onto what Daniel could do here. He's got the camera, he's got the editing skills, and he's got a network of people with stories that currently have nowhere to go. The question is, what makes those stories add up to something more than a YouTube channel?
That's where the Berlin example gets interesting. The Deutsche Wohnen and Company Expropriate Campaign. And I apologize to any German speakers listening for what I just did to that pronunciation, started as a grassroots signature drive. They collected 77,000 signatures in 2019, enough to force a citywide referendum on expropriating large corporate landlords. They used video, social media, local assemblies, but the thing that made it work was the framing. They didn't say, "We need complex regulatory reform." They said, "Housing is a human right, and these corporations are violating it." Simple, moral, impossible to ignore.
The referendum didn't pass, did it?
It didn't pass, but that's almost beside the point. The campaign shifted the Overton window so dramatically that rent control went from a fringe position to a mainstream political issue in Berlin. Politicians who'd never touched housing started scrambling to propose alternatives, because they saw 77,000 signatures and realized there was a constituency they'd been ignoring. The win wasn't the vote. The win was making housing politically costly to ignore.
That's the dynamic Daniel was describing. The problem isn't felt by the people making policy, so it doesn't register. The Berlin campaign made it felt, and they did it with a single clear ask, not a 40-page white paper.
The Scottish Living Rent campaign is the third model, and it's probably the most directly applicable because it combines everything we'd been talking about. They built a coalition of tenants' unions that successfully pushed for rent controls and eviction protections in 2022. Their strategy had two tracks. Online, they ran a rent calculator tool on their website. You plug in your postcode and your rent, and it shows you how much you're overpaying relative to local averages. Simple, viral, actionable. Offline, they organized in-person rent clinics at community centers, where tenants could get advice and, crucially, tell their stories to organizers who were building a database.
A database of stories, which is a registry of a different kind. Not prices, but human consequences. You walk into a legislator's office with a spreadsheet of 500 tenant testimonials from their own district. That's a different conversation than "we think the law should change."
That database is what they used when they met with members of the Scottish Parliament. It wasn't abstract. It was names, addresses, specific experiences of eviction and exploitation. Legislators couldn't dismiss it as a fringe complaint because the data showed it was widespread and the stories made it impossible to look away.
The pattern across all three, LA, Berlin, Scotland, is almost suspiciously consistent. Use storytelling to build a narrative, not a policy document. Create one simple ask that people can rally around. Escalate through media and direct action. And none of the founders were doing this full-time at the beginning.
That last point is the one I want to underline, because Daniel specifically said he can't dedicate full-time to this. He doesn't need to. The LA Tenants Union started with evening meetings and weekend actions. The Berlin campaign was signature gathering at farmers' markets and train stations. Living Rent built their database one rent clinic at a time, once a month. The consistent factor isn't hours, it's consistency itself. A regular content cadence, a regular in-person presence.
Let's make this concrete for Israel. Daniel starts something. Call it the Rental Diaries, since that's basically what it is. A YouTube channel or TikTok series collecting video testimonials from tenants, Hebrew and English. He's got the editing skills to make them compelling. Not just talking heads, but actual stories with pacing and emotional weight. Build an email list off that. Partner with the existing pro bono contract reviewers so there's a pipeline. You come for the legal help, you stay to share your story.
The stories become the database. After 6 months of consistent content, you've got 50 or 100 testimonials from real people in real districts. That's when you start pitching journalists. Haaretz, The Marker, Times of Israel, with a story that writes itself, look at what's happening to renters in this country, here are the receipts.
The thing about the rent calculator that Living Rent built, that's the kind of tool that could work here too, if you had even a basic data set. But that's the chicken and egg problem the 2017 law created. No registry, no data, no calculator. Which means the stories have to do the work that the data can't, at least at first.
Here's the blueprint, step by step. Step 1. Start the rental diaries. YouTube, TikTok, wherever the audience is. Collect video testimonials from tenants, Hebrew and English, and use Daniel's editing skills to make them watchable. Not just talking heads, actual stories with narrative shape. Step 2. Build a simple website. Story submission form, a Know Your Rights guide, translated from existing Hebrew resources, nothing fancy. Step 3. Once you've got a story database, pitch journalists. Haaretz, The Marker, Times of Israel. Give them the receipts.
Step 4 is where it stops being purely online. Organize a monthly rent clinic at the community center in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem. Partner with those overworked pro bono lawyers. Give them a venue and a crowd, and suddenly their contract review service has reach it didn't have before. People come for the legal help. They stay to share their story. The database grows.
Step 5. After 6 months of consistent content and a growing story bank, draft a one-page policy ask. Not a white paper. Something like mandatory lease registration, which is the single reform that would unlock everything else. Take that one-pager and start meeting with MKs. Not lobbying in the traditional sense, just showing up with a stack of testimonials from their own constituents and saying, these people vote, and they're paying attention now.
The through line here is consistency, not volume. A regular content cadence and one in-person event per month. That's manageable alongside a day job and it compounds. The movement builds itself if the narrative is compelling enough that people start sharing it without being asked.
For anyone listening who's in a similar situation outside Israel, the playbook is the same. Identify the specific mechanism causing the problem. Is it tenancy at will? No enforcement body? Build a narrative around real stories. Create one simple, specific ask. Escalate through media and direct action. The models work because they're replicable, not because they're complicated.
Back to Daniel's question. Can one person actually form something that matters? The answer from those three movements is yes, but not alone. The person with the camera isn't the whole movement. They're the catalyst. The coalition forms around the stories they surface, and the stories are what give the coalition its weight. Daniel's content creation skills are the force multiplier here. They're what turns individual complaints into something a politician can't dismiss with a phone call.
I think the open question worth sitting with is this. What would it actually take for Israeli politicians to care about rental reform? Maybe it's not about traditional lobbying at all. Maybe it's about making the problem visible enough that ignoring it becomes politically costly. The Berlin campaign didn't win their referendum, but they won the debate. Politicians who'd never touched housing suddenly had to have a position, because 77,000 signatures said this constituency exists and it's paying attention.
That's the shift. Right now, renters in Israel are invisible as a political bloc. They don't have a narrative. They don't have a database. They don't have a monthly event where they show up and get counted. The system relies on that invisibility. Break it, and the calculus changes.
If you're a tenant with a story, share it. If you're a content creator, use your skills. The system won't fix itself, and the people who designed it aren't losing sleep over your next move. But movements have been built from less. A camera, a website, a monthly clinic, and the willingness to keep showing up.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for making this show possible.
If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps more people find the show. And, if you've got a prompt for us, send it to show@myweirdprompts.com.
I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird promise, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.